Unreal Mockery, written and read by Sabine. In between, he dreams he's somewhere by the pool in hell, and he's surrounded by a dozen naked towel boys sucking him off and pouring him absinthe, and he cares. But of course, when he comes back, he's wherever Jeffrey is, and he would give up 1,000 pool boys for just that one magnificent son of a bitch. "Why are you still here?" Jeffrey whines, stacking his folders and paperwork in irrelevant piles. "I have your notes. I have your drawings. I have over 20 hours of uncut interview footage where you provide, in detail, your plans for Henry Breedlove's Macbeth." "You're not going to give up the ghost," Oliver says. Jeffrey glares. "Oh, shut up." Oliver pops up onto the desk and crosses his legs. Everything's so easy now he's dead. No pain anywhere except for Jeffrey. In that other place he goes, he gets off effortlessly. The boy's all tight and waxed and absolutely precious, servicing his whims. But instead he stays here and rests a palm on the desk and leans back rakishly. "I'm serious, Jeffrey. This story is about the ghost. It's about Macbeth, constantly haunted by his past, with very real and very terrifying hallucinations that drive him to madness." "I can relate," says Jeffrey, rubbing a hand through his hair. He sighs. "Maybe Ellen's right, and I am the scary kind of crazy." Oliver nods. "I used to be the charming kind of crazy," Jeffrey says. "I mean, after I stopped being the clinically paranoid and institutionalized kind of crazy." "I don't see why it matters," Oliver says, because that's become his favorite way of saying, "We should be talking about me now." "We both know it takes a certain kind of madness to direct this play, and with my help..." "Exactly," says Jeffrey. "It takes a certain kind of madness to direct this play with your help." He goes stubbornly back to his paperwork, and Oliver wraps his fingernails, now manicured perfectly and for all eternity, on the desktop. "You won't be able to do this without me," he says after a while. "This play is cursed, you know." Jeffrey pushes back from his desk and stands up. "It is not cursed. It is just incredibly difficult to stage effectively." "Which is precisely my point," Oliver says. "It's the relationship between man and ghost, present and past, that drives the play. And representing that struggle on stage takes a confident hand, and, it might even be said, a kind of genius. So don't dismiss me so quickly, or I might not be around to help you later. When you need me." And then, because he can't pass up a good exit, he leaves. Jeffrey is still awake when Oliver gets back from his lecherous limbo, though it has to be far in the morning hours in real Earth time. He's lying on one of the sofas in the prop closet, a garish period piece with torn upholstery and an indelible smell of pipe smoke, staring up at the ceiling with a copy of the play lying open on his chest. "It's hard," he says, like he senses it when Oliver appears. "This play, it's not easy." Oliver sinks into an armchair. "It isn't," he says. "It takes a great deal of care to approach this play, and it's not for everyone." "Not for me, you mean?" Oliver blinks. "Of course for you," he says. Then he smiles. "If I could face it, things should be no trouble for you." Jeffrey purses his lips and gives a little, practical nod. "I need your help," he says. And this is one of those times, those rare, memorable times, when Oliver's hungry ego doesn't get the better of him, and where he doesn't gloat or taunt, and instead says, "Anything you need, I'm yours." And it means he gets to stay here a while longer. Late one summer night, Oliver comes in to find Jeffrey perspiring in his office, incongruously dressed in a sweater and shorts. "Take that off," Oliver demands, before Jeffrey even realizes he's there. "You're making me sweat, and I can't even feel heat anymore." Jeffrey grumbles, leans back, and pulls his sweater over his head, and his undershirt is soft and threadbare and slick to his skin. And Oliver has to run a hand over his own chest under his jacket, because he can't touch Jeffrey's. "Yes," Jeffrey says. "It is hot, very, very hot. It is making it difficult to work, and thank you. Yes, I was overdressed. I haven't been paying much attention, I admit, to personal hygiene lately, but I think you'd agree that with this play..." Oliver can't smell anymore either, but he wrinkles his nose. "Let's continue this conversation in the shower," he says, waving a dismissive hand. After an argument that started, "I have seen your naked body more times than I care to count," and ended with, "You really are a disaster, Jeffrey. Someone needs to make sure you clean up." Jeffrey leans back, naked under the cool spray, Oliver sits on the toilet with his chin in his hands and orders himself not to do anything that might ruin this experience. The fact that Jeffrey says, "Ellen hates me," while he's soaping his groin is not suggestive, not at all. Oliver sits on his hands and just watches. "You still here?" Jeffrey calls through the steam. "Still here," says Oliver, and his voice hits a dissonant falsetto. He claps a hand to his mouth. "Ew, sorry," he says. "I don't know what that was about." "I said, Ellen hates me," Jeffrey says, a little louder this time. Oliver coughs. "Her loss," he shrugs. "That's what I said," Jeffrey says. "I mean, at first. Now?" God, the thrill of that precarious ego, Oliver thinks. He flicks open the top button on his ghostly trousers. "Ellen is a notoriously fickle woman," Oliver says. "One never knows what move might strike her next." Jeffrey's quiet for a while. "Maybe," he says. "Sometimes, though, I think we were just meant to be together." "Sometimes I think we were meant to be together," Oliver thinks. "All those productions we did together," Jeffrey says. "Yes," Oliver agrees. "The fighting?" Oliver laughs. "The passion. God, I don't think I'll ever feel that way again. Is this how it happens?" "How what happens?" Oliver asks, thinking he could drown the bastard in passion if that was what he wanted. "When you know, get older? Is it never that electric anymore? That, I don't know, that spark of innocence, perfect beauty?" A draft of cold air spirals in the window, and for a moment the steam clears, and Oliver can see Jeffrey's pale silhouette behind the clear mottled shower door. Jeffrey's leaning against the wall. His hands are in his hair, and the spray hits his chest, and Oliver watches it trickle down Jeffrey's body. "How should I know?" he snaps. "Half the time what I thought was passion turns out to be a bad hangover in the morning. Settle for some clumsy groping at this point." "Aren't there gay guys in heaven?" Jeffrey asks. "Couldn't you just, I don't know, stay there?" There are two reasons Oliver can't quite stay in that place he's going, which isn't heaven, but he won't tell Jeffrey that. The second reason is that Macbeth must go on. "Oh, hush," Oliver says. Jeffrey casually steps out of the shower, dressed in nothing but what God gave him, as if Oliver isn't even there. He swipes a hand across the foggy mirror and stares at himself. Oliver aches for him, reaches out to touch him, but his fingers pass coldly through Jeffrey's warm back. His cock strains at his trousers, but he won't go back, not yet, not till he's had all of Jeffrey he's allowed. He gets up to the part where Jeffrey towels his hair, bare-chested, with the towel hooked precariously on his hip bones, before Oliver has to snap back to a luscious blowjob, poolside in the fires of hell. The first dress rehearsal, the one without the ghost, is breathtaking. Enough to scare a theater person to the soles of his shoes, a good dress for a play like Macker's just promised tragedy. Jeffrey's off again on some crusade to make the play more spectacular, but Oliver's too enthralled by Jeffrey's magic to challenge him on just one crowd-pleasing sticking point. "It's not a crowd-pleaser," Jeffrey says later that night when Oliver's giving him hell for the nude scene he wants to include. "And it's not a nude scene, either. It's simply to show that Macbeth has a human side, that he has vulnerabilities, that his bloodlust comes from some physical context. The body exposes the man." Oliver sits down, quite close to Jeffrey, on the sofa. He can't feel where their legs touch, but he can imagine it. Jeffrey's warmth, the cuff of his shorts, the top of his thigh. "The body exposes the man, does it?" he muses. Jeffrey comes flying into Ellen's house, the night of the tech rehearsal in Q2Q. "I'm sorry," he says. "I miss you. I've been acting like a lunatic. Can I come in?" "You're in," she says. "What happened to you?" Oliver, wondering much the same thing, takes a seat at Ellen's kitchen table. Jeffrey runs his hands on his hair, wiping free leaves and mud. "I was in the woods," he says. "I went to the woods, you know, Burnham Wood for inspiration." "You went to Burnham Wood?" Ellen asks, arching an eyebrow. "Was Oliver with you when you went there?" Jeffrey peels off his jacket, hisses at Oliver, and turns back to Ellen. "Well, not Burnham Wood, exactly. That's in Scotland. That would be absurd. But out behind New Burbage, where the forest preserve is." "And did the trees come marching toward you?" Oliver grins. "It got quite dense and the rain didn't help," Jeffrey says. Ellen takes him by the shoulders and steers him to the chair across from Oliver's. "Well, here," she says, grabbing a dish towel. "Let me clean you up." Jeffrey's shirt is soaked through, and Ellen carefully takes it off, then lifts his undershirt up over his head. Oliver leans forward while she scrubs the back of his neck with a wet towel and practically purrs when she moves around to wipe the mud off his chest. Oliver tries to leave. Usually he can snap back and forth at will when his emotions are right and he concentrates. Now, though he tries to want those pool boys again, that perfect bliss where he could touch and be touched, instead his cock stiffens as he watches Ellen, who doesn't even know he's there, clean and caress Jeffrey's gorgeous, imperfect, vulnerable human body. "I have some ideas for Lady M," Jeffrey says, and Oliver sticks a hand down his pants. Ellen's delicate ministrations and the subtle movements of Jeffrey's flesh under her touch, all to the tune of Shakespeare understood by a master, is enough to make Oliver mad with frustration. He catches himself on more than one occasion reaching out as if he can touch Jeffrey, watching his cold hands slide through that live and trembling flesh. "Oh, this is just not fair," Oliver says. "Shut up," Jeffrey says. "What?" Ellen pushes away. Then she sighs. "Oh, Oliver again?" Oliver's cock aches. "Go away," Jeffrey says. "Leave me alone." "Leave us alone," Ellen shouts to somewhere off vaguely near the cupboards. Oliver laughs. A forced, choked gasp closes his eyes and lets one of the pool boys finish him off under hell's blazing parody of a sun. "Put the ghost back in," Oliver says. "Keep your nude scene if you like, but put the ghost back in." He says it not only because it's right and because the play calls for it and because Henry needs someone to play against in that scene, but because he's seen how vulnerable Jeffrey is, how impressionable, and he's also seen him fight. Oliver wants to see where his absent passions lay this time. "No," shouts Jeffrey, loud enough that other people in the theater can probably hear him from all the way here in the storage closet. "The ghost is out. Macbeth's madness is in his head. It isn't real. It can't really hurt him, but he's afraid of it just the same because it symbolizes the evil in him." "True," Oliver says. "It can't really hurt him. But if it is real, it can react, respond. Macbeth can hurt Banquo. Slay him, and then betray him." "Slay him, then betray him," Jeffrey says. "It would be easier if I had a pig truck." "You're absolutely unbelievable," Oliver says, beating Jeffrey to the stage one morning. "Are you trying to kill me? Again?" "Yep, pretty much," Jeffrey says. "Fine," Oliver surrenders. "Delete the ghost, ignore the ghost, ignore his needs." Jeffrey sits up straight. "Banquo is dead at this point in the play. Any needs he may have had are long behind him now. What's important is how the murder affects Macbeth." "Not if we give the ghost a chance to have a voice, to emote," Oliver says. "See how he yearned for Macbeth's friendship? See how the betrayal broke his heart? See, you know, things, secret things." "Secret things," Jeffrey raises an eyebrow. "Like, what kind of secret things?" "The ghost has no voice, you say, Jeffrey," Oliver says, that night in the office. "Tell me that, then. Tell me, standing before you, that I have no voice, no needs of my own." "You certainly seem to have a need to drive me crazy," Jeffrey agrees. "But your point is taken. We'll try it one night as a test run and see how it flies. I'll talk to Simon about some acting changes." Oliver's quiet while Jeffrey scribbles notes on the back of an unfinished grand proposal, licking his lip occasionally and smiling at every exclamation point. When he's done, he turns around and looks at Oliver. "I don't want to kill you again, exactly," he says. "It's just that sometimes you make it too difficult to have you around. Your neediness transcended death, I think." "Interesting." Oliver laughs roughly. "You don't know a thing about my so-called neediness," he says. "For Christ's sake, Jeffrey, I followed you into the shower yesterday. Do you have any idea how it kills me not to touch you, to know that I can never, touch you again?" "Oh, God, Oliver," Jeffrey says. "Really?" "Really," Oliver says. "But yet I come here every day. Your magnificence is worth more than 1,000 gorgeous pool boys burning in hell. It seems I can't leave now." "Because of me," Jeffrey says. Oliver shrugs. "Now it's out in the open. I mean, why should I stick around? Some of those towel boys are really impressive on a canvas chaise, let me tell you." "Okay," says Jeffrey, who looks like he's still hung up back on that "I want you" part. "So delete the ghost," Oliver says. Jeffrey nods. "Delete the ghost," he agrees. "It's Macbeth's show now," says Oliver. Opening night. Henry Breedlove swanned out of the production, too scared to be seen as vulnerable in all his nakedness for Act 1, Scene 5. And this understudy, a stammering but sturdy player named Jerry, panicked his way through a brilliant production. But it was Breedlove's Macbeth that made Oliver faint with surprise and sentiment and passion. It was his play, from his early sketches through his staging and comprehensive understanding of the character Breedlove should play, and all laced with Jeffrey. Unavoidable, unassailable Jeffrey with his golden touch in every pie. Oliver doesn't know whether to be insulted or to bust with pride. Oliver finds him backstage after the show. "Do me," he says. "The show, amazing, the cast, superb. Ellen particularly shone, and I even welcomed the absence of the ghost." "You were the absence of the ghost," Jeffrey hisses, "but thank you." "So do me fuck my brains out just once before I go back to that place of endless orgasms under an endless sun, mocked up with cocktails in a pool for the scum of the earth." "Oliver, really," Jeffrey says. "My last thing, my only thing, Jeffrey, you, my only thing." So, Oliver silent and Ellen unknowing, Jeffrey and Ellen tumble to the mattress, a mess of kisses and sprawling limbs. Oliver's undressed to his skivvies, and with a slow and terrified walk, he makes his way to Jeffrey's side of the bed and climbs up, tucking in behind Jeffrey's knees. His hands pass unsensible on Jeffrey's pale, smooth skin. Jeffrey moans. Ellen shimmies up to crouch at the head of the bed, and Jeffrey bends down to start chewing at her through her thong. Oliver can hear his teeth scrape on the lace, and he imagines Jeffrey's hand rubbing him off through his trousers, and sure enough, he's hard as a rock. He doesn't touch, can't touch, not like it would do anything. He's lost physical pleasure up here. Can yearn, but can never obtain. Instead, Oliver crawls up to Jeffrey's ass and cups a cheek in each hand, then slides his hands over Jeffrey's straight hips. Then he walks his fingers over Jeffrey's thigh, ends with them twittering just inside Jeffrey's inner leg, a maddeningly ticklish sweet spot. "Oh, God," moans Jeffrey, and Oliver thinks for a minute that Jeffrey might be feeling his caresses too. But then Ellen gasps and moans, and Oliver's forgotten she's here. At a certain point, the frustration of not being able to touch Jeffrey's long, lean body sends Oliver flying from the bed to the nearby armchair. "Just want to watch now," Jeffrey asks. "No," says Ellen. "I'd rather keep on doing what we're in the middle of doing. Thank you very much." "Yes," says Jeffrey. "Oh, yes." When Jeffrey comes, when Oliver gets to see Jeffrey's face in orgasmic bliss, he feels the fires of hell reflected in his face, and he nearly cries. Jeffrey pants, then surrenders to a completely satisfied smile. "So," Jeffrey asks, "was that sufficient?" "Oh, shut up," Ellen says. "You're always so obsessive about your performance. You read all your reviews, it's absurd." Oliver croaks. "It can't ever be," he says, "but now I have something to bring with me, something they can't take, the pure knowledge of you." Jeffrey looks at the floor. "Well, I'm glad," he says. "Good that you are, anyway," says Ellen. "And I'm in love with you, you obtuse maniac," Oliver puts in. He can see Jeffrey panic, looking from Ellen to Oliver. "I know I can be strange," Jeffrey says. "That's an understatement," Ellen says. "Unawareness of social cues is a sign of insanity," Oliver says. "But, and I know, I do know that I haven't shown it, but I love you. Fiercely, passionately, I love you." "Oh, Jeffrey," Ellen says suspiciously. "Both," Jeffrey says. "Both of you." Ellen tosses him a confused look, but Oliver's heart aches and cock twitches and he can't suppress what must be the world's most fatuous smile. "However," Jeffrey says, "I have to go." And he goes. And Ellen goes. And Oliver says, "Marco, I could use a hot stone treatment," and goes back to hell a happy man. The end.